because the bounding article is still in preparation. So sort of a teaser at the end, more than anything. Although I think I've told Daniel and Benny some things about this. And I didn't know what the level of the audience was, so let's talk about protecting quantum states very briefly. So what we do when our experiment has errors is we take our states and we apply some mapped, these states live in a small Hilbert space L, and we map them to a larger Hilbert space P. And this is called our encoding map. And then hopefully this encoding map has some nice properties that allow us to correct errors. Now, usually we don't specify the map directly. I mean, you could specify, given a state here, what is the encoded state? But a convenient formalism are these stabilizer codes, where you specify instead a stabilizer, a set of Pauli operators. And the encoded states are just eigenstates of these Pauli operators, plus one eigenstate. Not only is there a stabilizer, but there are also logical operators, and the basis for your logical states are also plus one eigenstates of those logical operators. So for example, over here is the simplest quantum code that corrects all single qubit errors, the five qubit code. And these are its Pauli stabilizers, and these are its logical operators. Okay, so we have a small audience, so just raise your hand if you want questions. So for instance, the main code that we're going to be using in this talk is this Bacon-Shor family of codes. These are subsystem codes, which is sort of a generalization of stabilizer codes. Defined by a gauge group instead of a stabilizer. But if you're unfamiliar with this, you can just think of it as this is basically a family of stabilizers. When you want to pick a stabilizer, you pick a maximally commuting subgroup of this gauge group. And these are called gauges. So this Bacon-Shor code is defined on this n by m grid of qubits. And the gauge operators are pairs of x on qubits in the same column and pairs of z on qubits in the same row. And the logical operators are z's along any column, so just the string of z's. And the x operator is a string of x along any row. And as I said, you can pick different gauges, which tell you what the stabilizer is. For instance, the Z gauge, which is the one we're going to be using mostly in this talk, makes the stabilizer equal to the Z-type gauge operators. And then the X-type stabilizers are just these very long blocks of X. So this is representing X on all qubits here in this square. These are the stabilizers. But other gauges are, you could do this, you could do the opposite. You could take the X gauge operators as stabilizers, or you could take something like the surface code, a checkerboard pattern of X and Z's. This is also like one gauge of the Bacon-Shor code. You can also switch from between the surface and Bacon-Shor code. Al Ferris has some mention of this in his thesis. Mostly we're going to be working just in the Z gauge. Okay. So great. Like we encoded our data, and then we want to know how do we do operations on this data in a protected manner. So like one way you could do this is you could always decode and then do your operation and then encode again. That will not be fault tolerant, as I'll define in a second what fault tolerant means. So although we can map like any unitary on the unencoded space to some unitary on the encoded space, the physical space, not all of these are going to be fault tolerant. So we want to know what encoded operators are fault tolerant. And it would be really great if we could find a universal set of these, for instance, like HT and C0, or H and controlled controlled Z. Because then we can do protected universal computation. Okay, so like, what makes a encoded operator fault tolerant? Well, it's sort of like the necessary conditions are sort of unknown at the moment. I mean, I guess it's sort of you know it when you see it. But like one very sufficient criteria is called transversality. So how transversality works is we take some decomposition of our physical space. And this decomposition should be into correctable pieces. This means that if we delete one of these pieces, we can still recover the encoded data. In fact, if we can delete d minus one of these pieces, then we say, like any d minus one, then we say the code has this since d. And like usually this decomposition is going to be just the qubits making up the physical space, but you know, if you want to prove things more generally, sometimes it's helpful to have a decomposition that's not just qubits. So a transversal U bar will obey the same decomposition. So the logical circuit will act only on, act in a tensor product over all of the correctable pieces. And why is this a good property to have? Why is this fault tolerant? Well, if any one of these operations goes wrong, or if up to d minus one of them goes wrong, you can still recover the data. I guess more specifically, you would have to know which d minus one goes wrong. But if you don't know which d minus one goes wrong, you can still correct d over two of them, and that would still be good. So as long as d is large enough. Okay, so that's what transversality is. It's a very desirable property for fault tolerance. So what are our contributions to it? Our primary result is a new set of transversal circuits for controlled Z. This is Z with K controls on M by M to the K Z-gauge Bacon-Shor. So these are transversal circuits, and they're on like this very simple code. So we might hope that these are actually very good for experiments as well. So once we develop these transversal circuits, we modify them a bit to, they actually become non-transversal. We do a more generalized error correction. And this allows us to do a CCZ on a 3x3 Bacon-Shor code. And I think this is like very promising for some quantum computing architectures to do fault tolerant computation. So I'm going to talk a little bit about that modification. So this is like the building part of the talk, building these gates, simplifying them, making them more practical. The second result are these bounds. This is an informal statement, I guess, but transversal gates on stabilizer codes, like the Z-gauge Bacon-Shor, are going to be limited to the Clifford hierarchy. We'll see that the asymmetry in this Bacon-Shor, you know, the fact that it's M to the K by M, is sort of important to how these transversal gates work, and such an asymmetry is actually necessary to have gates like high up in the hierarchy. And I guess you can draw a contrast if you're familiar with this work of Bravi Koenig, that in D dimensions, like a D dimensional local stabilizer code can only have D-level of the Clifford hierarchy gates. And it's similarly because of this asymmetry. So, but let's jump right into the building part. So this is the circuit for CCZ on three copies of the Bacon short code. So what is going on here? Well, there's code block A, which is the big black qubits. There should be 3 by 9 of all code blocks. Block B is medium-sized gray, and then light gray small is block C. And then these colored lines, the colors are just to sort of make it easier to picture what's going on, even though it's still pretty complicated, is these lines represent physical CCZ gates between the qubits. So there's a physical CCZ gate between these three qubits, between these three, between these two and this third one, and so on. And this makes a logical CCZ on these three code blocks. Right, and so this is just the CCZ with two controls, but if you want K controls, we can do that on M by M to the K Bacon short code, and it sort of follows the same sort of pattern. The gate range here, so something to notice is that, you know, these gates have to act between qubits that are sort of order M apart. We'll see that this is also a necessary feature. Okay, so there are some things that are surprising about this. That's because there are these no-go theorems, which say things about, you know, what transversal gates are you allowed to be able to implement on stabilizer codes. So I just want to talk briefly about these no-go theorems and how, you know, which assumptions we are ditching in order to make our gate. So the first one is this Easton-Knill. And it says that for any transversal partitioning of a quantum code, I guess I should add error detecting quantum code, the set of unitary logical gates is finite, and so therefore not universal. So how do we get around this? So first of all, what is our universal gate set? We're making CCZ, and Bacon-Shor also has H, but it only has H transversal on symmetric Bacon-Shor codes. So on the symmetric Bacon-Shor code, you get H, and on the asymmetric one, you get CCZ, and together those are universal, but you don't really have them on the same code. You have one on the symmetric code and one on the asymmetric code. So there is a method to convert between the two. So if we have a bunch of symmetric codes, we can join them together by measuring the gauge operators across the boundary. And this will convert it into a symmetric code in the Z gauge. So one way you can imagine doing universal computing with these Bacon-Shor gadgets is, you know, you start with all your qubits encoded in symmetric Bacon-Shor codes, you do H if you need to, and then you bring in ancillas to asymmetrize your code when you want to do a CCZ gate. So that's one way, and we get around Easton-Knill by changing codes.
If you want to go back to the symmetric one,
yeah.
How do you recommend doing that?
You measure all the qubits that you want to remove from the code in the X basis. I think that will do it. Because this is like...
Because the X distance...
Because if you measure all the ancilla or all the qubits you want to get rid of in the X basis, you're not actually measuring the X logical operator. Like, you've only got data on half of it. And you're definitely not measuring the Z logical operator because you measured in the complementary basis. I think if you just work through the stabilizer calculation, this works. I don't know if that satisfies you. The way that you go from the symmetric to the asymmetric is you start this in an ancilla state of logical plus. So to do the opposite is like returning this to logical plus by measuring everything in X basis.
Yeah, I'm worried about fault tolerance.
Well, this is just a transversal measurement, so that's okay. I would argue.
You definitely have to do something based on those measurement results, right? You're not just measuring, because the measurement might not be plus, right? So
you might have to apply a logical Z correction, maybe?
Right. So I guess you repeat the measurements enough to be sure that they're right.
Well, you already have, you already can do a majority vote because you have like many different representations of the same X that you've. This is like how you measure, just do logical measurement in a CSS code. You just measure everything transversally. And you don't have to repeat that.
That's because it's a cross code word.
Yeah.
Okay.
And this is the same in this like half of the code.
Okay. I have a question.
Yeah.
I guess we already discussed, but I kind of forgot.
That's okay.
So what's the connection to gravity coding result? Like,
yeah, sorry, next slide. the last thing on here is if instead of converting between the symmetric and asymmetric code, if you want to teleport H in, this is not unitary, so it doesn't violate Easton-Kinnell. Or rather, it violates the assumptions of Easton-Kinnell. You can do this as well. So then you can just always be working with asymmetric Bacon shortcodes, but teleport your H gates in. And this is actually like half of the Steen error correction circuit. So you also get to correct Z errors. Just as part of your error correction. You're doing an H as part of your error correction. Okay, so the Bravi-Koenig says, so this is another no-go theorem, and this says for local stabilizer codes in D dimensions, any depth, constant depth circuit that you do can only do logical operators in the Dth level of the Clifford hierarchy. So for one-dimensional local codes, you can only do Pauli operators. For two-dimensional codes, you can only do Clifford operators. For three-dimensional codes, you can hope to get like a universality completing set, so like T. You can't get them all on the same code because of Easton-Kinnell, but like you can get a T gate, and that will be enough with Clifford's. So how do we get around the assumptions here? Well, our circuits are not local, first of all. Because our gates have range order m. Also, we don't have there's two ways to think about it. Like, you either call the Bacon shortcode a local subsystem code, or you say that we're actually making gates on a non-local stabilizer code. You know, the Bacon shortcode in the Z gauge, where this X stabilizer is very non-local. So there's a similar result to Bravi-Koenig, which is Potosky-Yoshida. And this is like Bravi-Koenig for subsystem codes, but they have to have a threshold. And Bacon-Shore has no threshold. So something you can do, and it actually, I'm not sure this proof is actually that interesting, but you can show that constant depth circuits on Bacon-Shore for non-Clifford gates must have range. You know, the range of gates in the x and y dimensions have to have product that is ordered d. So the distance of the code. So in fact, it's necessary to have gates that sort of stretch distance d across the code. Okay. So. If that satisfies. Right. So now I'm going to just go through the argument for how we came up with this circuit. It's more general. It applies to more codes than just this one, so I think this is interesting to go through. So the main construction is this. Let's just start with the circuit identity, right? So this is for Hermitian unitary operators, and you could think of these as polys. The eigenvalues of these guys are plus or minus one, and so we can control some operation on a Hermitian unitary. Like we can define this control. So we'll write it this way, and what this means is that if this top qubit is in the plus one eigenspace of the control, then we do nothing. And if it's in the minus one eigenspace, then we do U. Okay? Then there's the circuit identity that if you take some Ancilla qubit and you, so this indicates, okay, so this controlled on this operator, CA, we're going to do Z, poly Z, and controlled on this operator, we're going to do poly X. Okay? And if we interleave these operations like this, then you get some operation that reads as controlled on operator CA, do CB, and this is actually symmetric. So controlled on CB, do CA. They're the same thing. And this is for, two registers and an Ancilla, but you can extend to more controls.
Sorry, so this is symmetric?
Yes.
Okay, is that an easy way to see that?
I guess it doesn't depend on the state of the Ancilla. So if we apply H to both sides, then these effectively interchange roles. Also, one special case of this is just like, if CA is poly Z and CB is poly Z, then this turns into CZ, which is symmetric. I mean, I know that's not a proof in general, but like, this is how we're going to be using it essentially. So, I mean, if you want to keep that example in mind.
Is it as simple as just saying that you have a minus I on the Ancilla, if and only if both the top and the bottom register are in the minus one eigenspaces?
You have a minus I, minus identity, you mean?
Yeah, the minus.
You get a minus sign.
If and only if you have, you're in the negative one eigenspace on both top and bottom. Otherwise, things cancel out.
Yeah, okay.
Thanks. Yep, so we have this trick. And then, let's say that we can decompose this Hermitian unitary gates into a product of more Hermitian unitary gates. Then you can repeatedly apply this identity and decompose this symmetric operator that we were dealing with before into this round robin. You know, I'm going to call this the round robin decomposition. So if CA decomposes into these three gates and CB also decomposes into three gates, then we can do this symmetric controlled version by you know, basically taking all combinations. So the first gate in the decomposition of A with the first gate in the decomposition of B, second gate, first gate, third gate, first gate, first gate, second gate, second gate, second gate, so on. Okay. So this is just, I mean the argument is just in, I guess, iterative application of this identity. All of these little gadgets? I don't think, in general, I don't think they need to commute. We will have gadgets that commute, though. It's just as long as this decomposition holds. It's been a while since I worked through the details, but I think that's the case. So now we're going to apply this round robin trick to make logical gates. So let's make logical controlled Z. And all this is like, you know, you want to do logical Z on the first code block, controlled on logical Z of the second code block. And because these are stabilizer codes, we can write logical Z as a product of Z's along some qubits and in the code block. And the same with logical Z on the second code block. And then the round robin trick just tells us we need to couple all of these qubits in all the ways. So if both code blocks are distance D, then this takes D squared physical CZ gates. This will do logical CZ on any stabilizer code. In fact, the two code blocks don't need to be the same code either. Just by the round robin trick, this works. And you can generalize this then to CCZ. And the trick is the same. It's just connect every qubit in all the code blocks in all other ways with the other code blocks. You know, so if each code is distance D, then there are D cubed CCZ gates here. And CCZ is where it starts to get interesting because this is computationally universal when we pair it with H. Okay, but although this does, you know, a logical operation, it's not fault tolerant at all. Because if some error happens here, let's say, then this error can propagate to many places in the other code blocks. In fact, it can propagate to exactly the places where it's harmful, because these qubits here support a logical operator. So, you know, if we propagate errors to those, then it's possible that a logical error will occur, and we can't even detect and correct that. So how do you make round robin circuits fault tolerant? Well, one way to do it is to insert intermediate measurements. So we can, in these cases of CZ and CCZ, it's the X errors that are bad because the X errors will actually propagate through the CCZ gates. So we want to correct those before they get out of hand. So we can actually measure the Z type stabilizers in between different pieces of the circuit. So we break our circuit into pieces, like T pieces, and then between each we will correct X errors. How many pieces you need to break it into, one upper bound is like D over 2. For CZ and for CCZ, D squared over 4. Whether you have enough, so we're specifically talking about CSS codes here, and for CSS codes, this breakdown will correct all the errors that you need. So for instance, here's the CZ circuit, and we could break it into transversal pieces such that when we correct errors after this transversal piece, we know there's at most one error here, so it propagates to at most one qubit in the other block, and then we correct again, and so on. So what are the problems with this intermediate correction? Well, error correction is sort of expensive because you have to measure all these stabilizers. And this is taking actually many rounds of it. And also, because the depth of this whole process scales with D, there's no asymptotic threshold unless you concatenate. So one thing we can try is to start with the round robin circuit and then simplify it before making it fault tolerant. Okay, so, right. So this simplification is something I call compiling in the code space, and it's based on the simple fact that stabilizers are the identity. Stabilizers are the identity, but also when you control the stabilizers on other qubits, they're the identity as well. So if S is a Z-type stabilizer, it's a tensor product of Zs, of poly Z, then controlled S is a product of controlled Z gates. And controlled S is a product of controlled Z gates. And we can use all of these, which are equivalent to the identity on the code space, to simplify our round-robin circuits. I'd say multiply the round-robin circuits by these identities, and they will move and cancel the physical CCZ gates, and you can write equivalent logical circuits this way.
A quick question.
Yeah.
That assumes that you're actually in the stabilizer, right? So if somehow in the circuit there is an error that takes your space to a negative eigenspace, would that be a problem, or things just come
well? Right now I'm not thinking about errors at all. I'm just like saying, does this logical circuit do the correct thing? Like the round robin circuit does the correct thing, but yeah, it's not fault tolerant. And so we're trying to find equivalent circuits that do the correct thing, and hopefully they look nicer than the round robin. So we'll see some examples. So for instance, on the 7-qubit code, you have your round robin circuit for CZ, and if you compile it, you get a transversal circuit for CZ. Now that's not surprising because we know the 7-qubit code has a transversal CZ. But if you do the same thing for CCZ and you take the round robin CCZ and you compile it, again on the 7-qubit code, you get something that is fault tolerant in two pieces instead of four here. Right? And actually, this says 21. So you went from 27 CCZ gates to 21 CCZ gates. So this code space compiling can actually cause, substantial simplification in your circuit. And in fact, the Bacon shortcode is a very good example of this simplification, because let's say we have an N by M Bacon shortcode, and remember the logical Z operator is along the left side. So if we want to do the round robin circuit for logical CZ, then we want to connect one of these qubits to all of the qubits in the second code block. Right? So this is one piece of the round robin circuit. But then we have this very simple stabilizer here, which is ZZ on these two qubits. So we know then that this circuit, this blue circle is supposed to correspond to these two qubits, so these two qubits here. This is identity because it's just a controlled stabilizer. So we can use this identity circuit what did I do here? So we want to move this controlled Z gate over. So we can multiply by this identity, and the red will cancel with the blue over here, and it will move the CZ gate over. So we can just shuffle CZ gates along the rows in the Bacon shortcode using these stabilizer identities. So in fact, we can shuffle all of these gates around so that it's now a depth one circuit. No qubit is involved in more than one gate. And then we have to put in all the other gates. You know, we only did a third of the calculation here. But if you put in the other two thirds, then you get this circuit for logical CZ on the Bacon shortcode. And so a similar calculation shows that you can shuffle all of these CCZ gates around on the m by m squared Bacon shortcode. And you need m squared because each qubit is involved in m squared gates that we then have to spread across the entire row. Okay, so great. So we have a transversal circuit for CCZ on Bacon Shore. The remaining ingredients are very simple. How do you encode logical plus and logical zero? And for Bacon Shore, this is very easy. They're just cat states. In fact, for distance three Bacon Shore, you don't even need to verify these cat states because making three qubit cat states is simple. Is naturally fault tolerant, I should say. And Bacon Shore actually can do Steen error correction very easily because it just requires cat states. Steen error correction uses encoded zero and encoded plus as its ancilla states, and these are just cats. Steen error correction is single shot. We don't need to repeat. And also measuring the logical operators of the CSS of a CSS code like the Bacon shortcode is transversal. So all these operations are very easy. The only sort of disappointing thing is that CCZ takes CCZ as we've drawn it up takes 3 by 9 qubits, so 27 qubits. And so the question is, can we simplify that somehow? So the first thing I want to do is get rid of the transversality, which I said was like great before. But transversality, you know, it can lead to some inefficiencies. So to get rid of the transversality, let's generalize our error correction, our recovery. So I guess the most generic recovery is as defined by Knill and Laflamme is that if you have some error channel, there is a recovery operation, another quantum channel, if and only if this condition holds for the Krauss operators of your error channel. I guess the intuition here is that each error is mapping you to an orthogonal space. But in fact, the stabilizer code standard does not actually use this generic Knill and Laflamme recovery. Because what is the stabilizer code standard? It says you measure all of the stabilizers, you get some syndrome information, and then you decide on a recovery. So this is actually different than the generic recovery, than the most general recovery. So in fact, if you do the stabilizer code standard, your condition for an existence of these recovery maps becomes more stringent. In fact, you have a additional projection onto these cosets inserted in between the error operators. So this means that error operators that were indeed different may not look different with respect to this projection. So it can collapse. I mean, the intuition here is that it's collapsing all your errors to polys, and that might make them indistinguishable. So the conclusion is we don't want to use standard stabilizer code error correction. we would prefer something a little more general. Okay, so instead what we're going to do is exploit some structure of the circuit. So if we have some circuit, then the errors in that circuit cause some error channel, which depends on the circuit. Instead, our recovery, at least in a Bacon short code case, is we're going to measure half of the stabilizers. We're going to measure the Z-type stabilizers first, and then do some recovery, and then the X-type stabilizers and do some recovery. You know, so this differs from the stabilizer code standard because we're measuring some of the operators first, and then the rest of them later. I don't want to get into too much of the details, but the reason that we're applying X and CZ recovery here is because when an X error enters a CCZ gate, we can get X errors and CZ errors. So we want to correct those before, in fact, we want to correct the CZ errors before they are collapsed by measuring the X stabilizers. And so we can come up with a circuit that does this. I'm just showing the first part of the circuit on the first column of the three code blocks. But this circuit for logical CCZ does logical CCZ on the 3x3 Bacon short code, and does it fault tolerantly if you do this more general error correction. So once we have it down to this 3x3 case, there's more hope that experimentalists can actually do this fault-tolerant experiment. I think everyone in the room is a theorist, but experiments are sort of, the reason we do these fault-tolerant thought experiments. A leading architecture is this ion trap architecture by Chris Monroe. He put a paper out on this, I guess it's been a few years now, called the Music Queue architecture. And there are various parameters for how fast, you know, they hope, they wish they could do their various gates. And there are other parameters for how many qubits they, again, wish to have in a single ion trap called an elementary logical unit. And most of these qubits, well, about half of the qubits in every ion trap are designated as communication qubits, which means they just exist to hold entanglement with other elementary logical units. So this allows us to do non-local gates not only within an ELU, but also between ELUs using the entanglement. So this fact that gates can be non-local is very important to us because, remember, we need to do controlled Z gates that actually have range. So ion traps seem like they can do non-local gates.
Practice?
How often?
How do you implement CZ?
Oh,
like CZ, I can do that by like two-body power interaction.
Yeah.
I would think like kind of three-body.
Yeah, for CCZ, I think basically they just decompose it into CZ and like Hadamard gates and T gates. Yeah. I mean, I've asked them if there's like a better way, but they sort of, I don't know if they just don't want to think about it or.
Is CCZ expensive or?
Well, in terms of T gates, I think there's a construction with seven. What?
How many T gates? Just one.
No, I think it's seven. For one CCZ, maybe without ancillas. Maybe you're thinking of with ancillas. But if you don't use any ancillas, just T and T dagger gates. That doesn't change, like, yes, it changes the failure rate of a CCZ, but it doesn't, like, we're going to have an error model where gates are just followed by random polys. But if you're decomposing your, if you're implementing your CCZ gate somehow, it's still just followed by random polys. I guess the distribution of that may change, but. This is just comparing the MusicQ with Innsbruck's architecture, which is more recent, and some of the numbers are similar. So I wanted to make sure I'm not using numbers that are a little bit outrageous. You know, both groups wish for the same sort of capability. So using those numbers, we can actually end our circuit. We can actually estimate how many resources are required to do our gates and compare them with magic states. So again, this is all for distance 3, so fault tolerance to one error. And circuit volume here is if we count the gates and we weight them by the number of qubits. So a single qubit gate is just counted once, a two qubit gate's counted twice, a three qubit gate's counted three times. And we see like some factor of about 3 savings in circuit volume here. Space time is the number of qubits active at any one point, times how long the gate takes. So we're actually using like the real microsecond gate times here.
Can you explain more?
Oh, so we have some circuit, and we want to know like different things about how hard it is to implement. So we have our Bacon-Shor 3x3 controlled Z gate, and we also have magic state implementations of the same things for the 7 qubit code and for the 9 qubit code. Yeah, sorry. Yeah. And using the like gate times from the experiment, we can determine like what space-time volume these circuits will occupy, and also like how long they will take if we parallelize things, and also the number of qubits that they take, allowing some reusability. I didn't do that. Yeah. That would probably, it would be a good thing to do. So the 3D color code's like the 15 qubit code, right? So it would be a good thing to do. I mean, already you're losing out on qubits though, so.
So they are for different gates, right? With the magic states, you're performing an irrational angle rotation on.
No, I'm also doing CCZ gates for the magic. These are all for CCZ gates. Yeah, so here's the magic state creation circuit. So this is, you're measuring this stabilizer that is Clifford, and you have to do it twice in order to make sure you got the correct answer. So if these post selections happen, then you're guaranteed that you have the CCZ magic state, up to like one error or whatever. And then you can inject this magic state to do a logical CCZ.
But in this case, then it also depends on what gauge you actually want outside of the Clifford, right?
Yeah.
The conversion between some of these, say, Power 8 gate versus the Toffoli gate by itself is a factor of a large number.
Yeah. So I tried to, because our circuit does CCZ, I compared to other CCZs.
I mean, like if you included the 15 qubit code, presumably that would be much better for CCZ because you can do it transversely. But it'll be worse for other things, right?
Yeah, that's true. So it might be worse for Hadamard. I was in.
It's worse than the Hadamard for 7 cubic foot, right? For instance.
Yeah. The thing is, I'm including all of like the post selection work for creating the ancilla states, and I guess. Even the ancilla states for like doing Steen error correction and stuff. So that's actually large. You know, one of the big advantages of Bacon Shore here is that to create those ancilla states, you don't even need to do post-selection because you just make 3 qubit cat states naturally fault tolerant. Because you're doing Steen error correction, you don't need to repeat. Right, so.
Sorry, but you're doing it in them both gateways?
Yeah.
I think you still need to repeat that. Maybe not.
Yeah, I don't. I mean, because you get out all the stabilizer information. Like, okay, all I need is the stabilizers.
So I thought if I have T magic set, I can create CCs in magic state by Clifford.
Well, how many do you need?
I have no idea.
I mean, you can do it with at most 7, I guess, because there's a...
So...
And I guess Cody Jones has some...
So, but can we just use magic...
You can use.
Hold on, no, I need to use 15. Okay, sorry.
Yeah, I mean, I guess you can make T magic states and then use them to make a CCZ gate. But I think that's worse.
I don't have any.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's worse because I did estimates before, and it was worse. Now, I mean, it could be that you come up with a better way.
So what is the problem?
Well, you just need a lot of T states to make one CCZ.
Well, I think one T gate is enough to create CCZ, I think.
To make a CCZ state.
There should be a way to do that, is my guess.
I mean, the...
I don't think so.
I think
more than one.
I mean, I think my estimates were using Cody Jones's method of decomposing the.
I see.
But that requires, I think it's 4 T gates. So, I don't know any way with 1, but. Right, okay. So that's the overhead. Oh man, we need to get to the bounding part. So these are pseudo thresholds for an XREC made up of our logical CCZ gate. So on the x-axis is the physical error rate. So this is like the probability a gate fails. And this error model here sets all of these probabilities equal. So the probability a CCZ fails, a probability a CNOT fails, and a probability that a single qubit gate and measurements and preparation fails are all the same. The right error model makes it more likely that larger components fail. But on the y-axis, we're plotting the logical failure probability, and then we're dividing out the leading order. The leading order is p squared. So this isolates the constant times 10,000 or times 1,000. And so you can see that here's an identity XREC for Bacon Shore, and it's actually better than the identity XREC for the surface code. Basically because we get to use Steen error correction sort of. Yeah, like Steen error correction is really nice because you don't need to repeat. Here's the CZ for Bacon Shore, and here's the CCZ. Yes, and those are threshold estimates there. You know, where this line crosses the unencoded probability. So we can also compare to the 7-qubit magic XREC, and this is a lot higher. This is like a factor of 4 larger error rate. And then for the error model on the right, where larger gates fail more often. Not much more to say there. Okay. So the bounding part is ongoing, and Thomas and Alex are sort of in the neighborhood now and then, so maybe you guys know Thomas, Joachim O'Connor, and Alex Kubica. So our goal here is to figure out what transversal gates can you do on stabilizer codes. I guess I'm throwing a lot of formulas here, but the basic idea is a transversal gate is with respect to some partition of the physical space. So this can be a partition just in terms of the physical qubits or whatever. And with respect to this partition, you can define distances of various cosets. So this L is the set of logical operators that are non-trivial. This is like includes X bar and Z bar, and also equivalent implementations of them. And so the distance of a coset is the minimum representative, is the size of the minimum representative. Size is the number of pieces that it's supported on. And the distance of the code is the smallest over all logical cosets. There's also a largest logical operator, though. And our result says that if you have a code block of this code and its distance is greater than 1, then there is some constant such that, I stated this a little funky, but so if this condition holds, then transversal gates in the mth level of the Clifford hierarchy are in the mth level of the Clifford hierarchy. So in particular, if you want to violate this condition, if you want a gate in the mth level of the Clifford hierarchy, but not in the m minus 1th level of the Clifford hierarchy, then you need a large max up distance, max distance, with respect to the lower distance. In fact, it needs to be exponentially larger because of this factor.
Sorry.
Yeah.
Talk about this. Either I've forgotten or this is different.
Yeah, I think I changed some notation.
Okay.
And I didn't mention.
This is a single code.
This is a single code block right here.
And not a family of codes, I mean, just a single.
Oh, yes, yes.
But then C can be anything less than 1. So it can be arbitrarily close to 1. Or arbitrarily small.
C depends on the particular code. But it's guaranteed that it's less than 1.
The C, it depends on some other properties of the code,
Yeah, it depends on some other.
Exactly, the conditioner. So it's, then there exists C such that if 1 holds, then transversal gates?
If 1 holds, then transversal gates.
Okay, so C is already determined, you don't get to pick it.
Yes.
Okay.
Well, it's determined by picking the code. Yes.
Okay, and what does it depend on, C?
So I mentioned to you this disjointness property. So C is actually, this isn't going to be that meaningful to the rest, but we had this disjointness, C disjointness of some coset. So there's a C disjointness, and then C is the is some like maximum C disjointness. So it's just in order to state the bound in a nicer form, I think. Right. So that's for a single code block, and then for more code blocks, you can get a more complicated bound. But the point here is always that C is less than one, so therefore, actually, let's just go to the simpler one. C is less than one, so therefore, you know, one over C is greater than one. And for large enough M, this right-hand side must get larger than this. So you must be restricted to the Clifford hierarchy, because for large enough M, this bound will definitely hold. So that's how you reach the conclusion that all transversal gates are in the Clifford hierarchy.
And so I asked you this question before, and I don't remember if you ever looked at it or something, but like the Ravi-Koenig, doesn't that also apply that? I mean, if you look at dimension equal to n or something, the code can definitely be in n dimensions.
Yeah, but it's, but that's...
And obviously this is stronger because you have this disjointness condition.
Yeah, so there's that, and also Ravi-Koenig, as far as I understand, applies just to a family of codes, and not... Like you might wonder, is there a particular code with some transversal partition that, you know, will have a universal set of gates, but it doesn't actually scale to arbitrary distance? And this says that it can't happen. Yeah, so I'm going to end there. This is a summary slide.
So, very nice question. So, Bacon-Shaw does not have a threshold in a strict sense, but sometimes it works pretty well.
Yes.
And then, is this the case here? I mean, I don't know how to.
Yeah, I have some.
What's that?
I have some.
Yeah.
It's sort of wimpy data, actually, because I didn't go to very high distances. But this is up to distance like 9, I guess. If we do minimum weight matching, yeah, m equals n equals 9. If we do minimum weight matching, you can figure out what, you know, the logical error rate is, and see that at least up until n equals 9, it sort of looks like, you know, maybe there's some crossing point here. But these should drift down. Yeah.
I mean, there's an old paper by Alferis and Cross where they looked at the thresholds for concatenated.
Yes. Yeah, this is not concatenated.
I think they like the 5x5 code.
Yeah, I think that's right. For concatenated.
But presumably it's a similar. I was just, they were just trying to hit the best threshold, so.
So what was the issue?
Well, I mean, in general, if you make the code larger, there's more possibilities for errors. Right? I mean, so the expected total number of errors scales with n. Distance only scaling is the square root of n. So the Torah code, that's okay because you still correct typical errors. Bacon-Shaw code does it, so you're losing out at some point. But
I think the paper by like Peter Brooks and John Preskill has more definitive data for all different noise biases and everything. For,
right.
What they think the optimal size Bacon-Shaw code is. no other questions.